Hello and welcome to Horror Movie Yearbook. I am one of your hosts, Willie, and with me is...
Tim.
Yes, there he is, my favorite co-host.
Yes.
Just a few things off the top. I would like to explain to you who we are and what we do here at Horror Movie Yearbook, because I'm going to assume that you've listened to our wonderful episode one, in which we covered the class of 1999, the Blair Witch Project, The Sixth Sense, and of course...
Audition,
thank you. If you have not listened to that, go back and listen to it.
Do it.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a lot of fun on that show. But if for some strange reason you really want to hear about 81 before 99, I mean, it makes sense chronologically, but we don't like chronology here. We
no.
like to just go nuts.
Yeah. We have a time machine. We use it.
We just jump around.
Yeah.
Why would you? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Chronologically. I live chronologically.
Yeah, it's boring. Anyway, so if you don't want to go back and listen to 99, what we do here on Horror Movie Yearbook is we pick a year. A random year, and we pick three movies from that year, three horror films that we find interesting in different ways. A lot of the time, we like to relate what's going on in the world in that given year to the horror movies that were going on at the time. There's some stuff culturally, I think, that you can see reflected in the horror movies of the time, and I think that's interesting. Sometimes we just like to talk about movies we like, too.
Yeah.
So occasionally, you'll see one slip in there. You might see one tonight that slips in there a little bit. That's just because it's fun. But that's what we do, and we are very excited about it. First things first, Tim, one thing I am excited about is the fact that we got a lot of feedback.
We did. It was awesome.
It was awesome. I felt really good about it.
Me, too.
I do want to say... We received lots of cool responses to a question I posed on Facebook. What was your favorite horror film of 1999? We had quite a few good ones. The official wife of Horror Movie Yearbook, Nikki Gibbs, said Stigmata or Ravenous. So she picked two.
Two excellent choices.
Excellent choices. Ones we didn't cover, but excellent choices nonetheless. Your brother Greg.
Yes.
Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah, well, obvious choice.
Yes. And I'm almost sad we didn't cover that. We might have to revisit 99 because it was such a good year.
Yeah, that's what's nice is we can revisit.
Yes.
Certain years.
Like the Redux.
Because we can go deeper.
Yeah. Oh.
Deeper and bluer.
Deeper
our head
and
is
bluer.
Like a shark spin.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It sure is. My dad, who, by the way, I do want to say, the first bits we got when we started our Facebook were, of course, I don't know if you noticed, but it was two posts from each of our dads.
Yeah.
And they were both like, good luck, fellas. Let's see right. what you got. It was really nice. Very sweet. But my dad actually said the Blair Witch Project, so he's a big fan of that one. I knew that going into it.
Okay.
And then the Midwest Podcast Network's own John Morrell, host of the Midwest Game Nerds podcast, said that Stigmata is a great one. He agreed with Nikki, and also said The Mummy and Sleepy Hollow, which I like those choices.
Yeah, we went back and forth on The Mummy. I'm sticking with it being a horror movie.
I think it counts enough. And I mean, is it a remake? No. But
right.
Yeah, I think it counts.
And John would like Stigmata because I believe John is a big 90s alternative fan, and Billy Corgan does the score for Stigmata.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't know this. This is fantastic.
Yeah, it's good.
That's fantastic. All right, good. I thought you were going to say he's a big Gabriel Byrne enthusiast.
No, I just – that's assumed.
Yeah, everybody is. We did get a couple of emails at horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. Our first one is from a frequent listener of our show that we used to kind of be on weekly, Midwest Film Nerds, named Sandy. He, great fellow. He's got a wonderful podcast. You should all check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Films of Every Color.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. But anyway, Sandy says, Ni hao, horror scholars.
Ni hao.
I just got done listening to the first episode of Horror Movie Yearbook. Fun show, great choice of year for your first episode. I love the whole concept of the show, and I think you're already proving that horror movies are a fascinating prism through which to view the past. Thank you, Sandy. What a wonderful man.
Yeah, very nice.
Your observations on Audition were especially interesting and remind me that I should revisit one of my favorite films of all time more frequently. On that note, I've attached an image that upholds your assertion that Audition is a movie worthy of the words iconic. I made this banner as the first in a big bundle of banners for films of every color, but haven't felt the need to change it for another image all year. Keep up the great work. 1981 will be a fun ride. P.S. I'll email you both a pint of ale if you can guess which J-horror film provided the still for my previous banner design. I was guessing the eye. Now, the image that he showed was an eyeball that looked like it had been popped out of a head through a pane of glass is what it looked like. And I guessed the eye because I could not come up with anything better. You had a different.
I believe it's Houseu? Yeah.
Okay. Well, Sandy, we each have a guess. So you can either send... both of us a pint of ale, or neither one of us, or just whatever.
Yeah.
Let us know. I'm
just
curious.
Let us know if we're right.
Yeah, and then I want to watch that whichever one. I don't think I've seen either one.
Have you never seen Hasu?
No.
Oh,
I've heard it's crazy.
Yeah. Raimi, you can, Raimi is very influenced by it for Evil Dead.
Oh.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yep.
It's kind of wacky, I've heard.
A lot of his montage shots look a lot like the shots from Hasu.
There's a lot of like hand-drawn animation in that movie too, right? That's cool. Got another email from Jason. Not that Jason, but Jason. 10 years later, 2009. The Collector is a personal favorite of mine. Yeah, so I think we can say it at the top, right?
Oh yeah,
we like this feedback. We love hearing from people that are listening to us, positive or negative, and we actually listen to our feedback and our listeners. So you know what? I think next episode we're doing it, right?
We're gonna do 2099.
Yep.
And
2099.
2099. Oh my god!
The alternate Marvel. Marvel Universe.
I'm so happy that happened right now.
That's
you don't
awesome.
Even know. Yeah, we are going to be reviewing Doom 2099, Spider-Man 2099, and X-Men 2099.
Yeah, we didn't get around to Punisher, so.
it's a joke for nobody except
yes,
for you.
Nobody.
We're going to be doing The Collector.
Yep.
Because I actually haven't seen it.
Yeah, which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
And but I'm excited.
There are also like four or five slashers around that time. I'm giving everybody a heads up so you can do a little homework before you watch listen to the next episode. We are going to be doing Orphan, which is a personal favorite of both Willie and I.
Very excited about that one.
And we are going to do Drag Me to Hell, which I think is a classic.
Yes.
I think it's a new classic.
Yes.
So.
And I think, I'm trying to think, Orphan, a couple of those I haven't seen in a long time. So I'm excited to revisit those as well. That's one of the nice things about having this podcast is being able to watch stuff, you know, that I haven't seen in a while. Nancy contacted us on Twitter, at HM Yearbook on Twitter. Nancy says, hello, will you be covering Stephen King? 76, 80, and 91 have great Stephen King options to review. My favorites are Carrie, The Shining, and Misery. All scared me a lot. Also love 84's Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah, so I think it's safe to say, I think it'd be impossible to do really any horror podcast, especially of the kind we're trying to do here, and not occasionally get to King.
Especially 70s and 80s. Yeah.
I mean, for a lot of people, King is an entryway into horror at large. And I think that it was for us probably to varying degrees. But I'm excited to talk about some of those. I think one of those is going to be coming up on a future episode. I won't say which, and I won't say what year, because that would probably give it away. So, yeah, one of those, I think, on a future episode, for sure. So, thanks, Nancy. Fandom Tech. I don't know Fandom Tech's actual name. It might be because I'm Twitter stupid. But I couldn't figure out what Fandom Tech's actual name is. But Fandom Tech.
Okay.
That's what he goes. That's his handle. I had posed the question of what his favorite horror movie was of 81 going into this episode. And he said, hard tie between Evil Dead, My Bloody Valentine, or The Beyond. And I had mentioned that we'd probably be doing one of those films. And if you're listening, you know by now which one of those films it is. He said he hopes it's The Beyond. So once again, we like to listen to you guys. Actually, that was in the cards to begin with. He's just really good at predicting what we're going to do next. And then Amy on Facebook said Funhouse was her favorite from 81.
I do like Funhouse.
Funhouse is, no pun intended, a lot of fun.
It is.
It is. And Toby Hooper is a guy I've always been fascinated by. Just such an interesting career trajectory. Interesting choices. So anyway, thanks everybody for the feedback. Really awesome stuff. I'm just so psyched that we had such a response to episode one.
Yeah, it's awesome. And keep writing in.
Yeah, please do. Because I love when people present new ideas to us. And, you know, just the fact that we're basing the 2000, like 2009 is happening now because of our listeners. So I'm excited about it. Tim, I think we need to hop in our time machine. I think it's time to travel back. I'm ready.
Are you ready?
I want to go back to 81, man. Let's do it. I was not alive in 81. Neither were you.
I would have been -3 at the time.
-3. Okay. Yeah, I was -5.
Do you have any ideas of what you would be like in 1981?
I don't know. I think I'd be listening to a lot of...
we would be in high school, I would assume.
I'd be listening to a lot of Soft Cell, I think.
Okay, you would be into like the new wave.
Yes.
Okay. 100%.
Yeah. I'd be that guy.
Yeah. Okay.
You can see it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I would be, if we're talking about music-wise, Prince was around, but he hadn't really hit the big time. Because when I was in high school, I was big into, I liked hip-hop, and I liked Weezer. Like, Outkast and Weezer were my two favorite groups.
Yeah, kind of.
I have no idea what that was.
So, Tim's house is haunted. That was terrifying. I think we should leave that in because that was terrifying.
I don't know what that was.
Yes, there was a strange sound emanating from the back of Tim's home. And maybe we should check it out. I don't know. But
no, we'll just go through.
We'll go through.
We'll plow through.
We'll plow through. Anyway, so yeah, I've been listening to Soft Cell.
I really hope the mic picked
that up. Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, Soft Cell. So if I was into Outkast, I would assume Prince is kind of a step. And during that time, Prince and Outkast are very similar.
Yeah, there's a you could compare the two for sure.
I don't think I would be into hip hop because hip hop was just kind of breaking at the point, at that time. So, and I lived in northern Michigan, and I don't think it had gotten. I don't think it had reached.
Yeah, it didn't. It hadn't quite hit that market yet.
No, and then so if I liked Weezer, then I'd probably be into the Ramones.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah,
I would be into the Cars.
I'd be listening to the Cars too. I still do, but I'm like saying like I would be. I listen to this stuff, so I'd be pretty happy in 81. I feel like,
yeah,
like
I think so
like,
too.
I'm looking at we're going to be getting to some of the big songs of the year, and I'm like, oh, pretty good for the most part, not bad. You know,
you would definitely be into Stephen King.
Yes,
this time.
Yeah. It'd be a lot of new wave and lonely Stephen King reading. I think for me, so
you would have like the shirt that says Stephen King rules.
Yes, I would have that shirt. I love that shirt. I'm going to look that up online. I want to buy one now. All right, so 81. We're back in 81 right now. We just jumped in our time machine. I want to talk a little bit about what was going on in the world at the time. In 81, Iran released American hostages that were held for 444 days. So that finally went down, thank goodness. Ronald Reagan was elected U.S. president in 81. The space shuttle Columbia took flight for the first time in 81. Mm. The Soviet Union launched a space probe in 81. So the space race was still alive, still strong, I think, at this point. And it was still the Soviets and the U.S. battling each other for domination. There were anti-nuclear protests in the U.S. and U.K. this year, major protests. There was a lot of tension in the world at the time about nuclear disarmament.
Yes.
Disarmament, not armament. And that bled really into everybody. And I think in the UK, actually not just in the UK, but in Europe especially, there's a lot going on there.
Right.
Especially with Russia. And Muhammad Ali retired.
Rocky hadn't solved it yet. Rocky had not ended the Cold War.
That was, 84? Or 80? No, it was
I thought it was 86.
86?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so he had a couple of years. He had 5 years or so before he'd step in and take care of business.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, once he handled Drago, things...
Handled Drago and then gave the speech about how we can all change.
An impassioned speech.
Cold
really
War
beautiful
over.
Stuff. Beautiful stuff.
Nice try, politicians.
Yeah, right? Muhammad Ali retired from professional boxing in 81.
Yeah, I forgot he boxed that late into his career. He should not have.
No.
That was a bad idea.
Bad call. Yep. But he did retire that year. The Yorkshire Ripper, who was a serial killer... in the UK, was caught, finally apprehended, after I think he claimed 13 victims. I don't know. I feel like that might be something that we can get into a little bit later.
Yeah, I think so. It's a cool name.
The Yorkshire Ripper? Yeah. I believe he was out of Yorkshire. scientists identified the AIDS virus in 1981.
They did, yeah.
Yes. So, and obviously there was a lot... all through the 80s and into the 90s, early 90s, the AIDS scare was a huge, huge thing. We really didn't know what we were dealing with for a while.
I had no clue. I remember when I was young and nobody knew how you could actually get it. Like there was not enough information about it. Like I remember being young and thinking you could get it from drinking fountains or sharing a pop with somebody.
People were legitimately scared about that.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know.
Right.
Terrifying stuff. And at that point, there was a lot of blame. The blame game was being placed a lot.
A lot of misinformation.
Yeah. We'll get into that too, for sure. I want to lighten the mood a little bit, because that, that's rough stuff. So the big songs of 81.
All right.
Some of the biggest singles of that year. Number one single of the year was Bette Davis Eyes by Kim Carnes.
Yes.
Which has ties to horror.
It was just in The Final Girls.
Yep. Featured.
It plays a major part in it. I like that song too.
It's a really good song.
It is good.
Yeah. It's actually a cover. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah, it's a cover. Cool. I think it was a 60s song, like a doo-wop song or something. I want to say that was the case. Like a Shirelles type situation.
Okay.
I think, and she completely changed it, but. In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins. One of the greats, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he wrote it about seeing someone die, seeing someone drown.
Really?
No, that was the urban legend that was passed around.
Oh, my God.
But it's not true.
Oh, my God.
Remember, like, Phil, the urban legend was, if I recall, I'm going to butcher this and I don't care.
That's okay.
Is that Phil watched some guy, watched some other guy drown and not help him.
Wow.
Because the song is like, I saw what you did.
Yeah.
So, but like, isn't he to blame a little there too?
Yeah, well, he would be just as bad, I feel
Yeah,
like.
He's kind of like someone, like, holding a camera.
Yeah.
While someone gets beat to
creepily
death.
Creepily filming.
So, really, that urban legend never made a lot of sense.
Yeah, he seems like too nice a guy to not intervene in that situation.
I bet you Phil Collins a dick.
You think so?
Yeah.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
Genesis had a lot of issues.
They did.
So you think Peter Gabriel is the nicer of the two?
No, I think they're both dicks.
Just both total dicks.
Because Peter Gabriel totally is.
Okay.
Yeah, because you could tell he's like the arty dick.
Oh, okay, yeah. And, then Phil just wants to play some cool jams.
Yeah, Phil. Yeah, remember Phil was part of the Genesis when they were like, I can't dance.
Yeah.
Like they're playing up how lame they were.
Yeah,
but you could
tell
like Phil is like one of those. He's like one of those. He's a different kind of dick than Peter Gabriel. He's not artsy, but he's like, he'd like be an asshole on the golf course.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. Phil, if you want to write in and let us know. Tainted Love by Soft Cell. We mentioned Soft Cell earlier.
Right.
9 to 5 by Dolly.
Oh my God. I love Dolly Parton so much.
Yeah, Dolly Parton's great.
And that song's amazing.
It's a really good song.
Yeah, and the movie is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fun movie.
My dream is, my girlfriend has been to Dolly World, and I want her to take me someday.
Oh my God. So that'd be incredible, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I would love to go. Mm-hmm. Is that in Nashville?
It's in Tennessee.
Okay.
I don't know if it's in a surrounding
probably outside.
Nashville.
Yeah. And Nashville is an amazing place if you get a chance.
Okay.
It really is. It's super cool. Let's Get Physical. Olivia Newton-John.
Right. I believe she was in Xanadu.
Around this time. Yeah. Yeah. She was on a tear.
The video's really stupid.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's really good.
I love it. And then Endless Love. Diana Ross and Lionel Richie.
My endless love.
Yeah.
A lot of soft rock.
Lots of soft rock. Yeah, nothing overly offensive.
No, it was like creeping in at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of the acts that would define the 80s in pop culture were kind of on the outskirts at this time.
Yeah, you're right. They were kind of on the probably a smaller club scene and stuff and just kind of
We're like a year away from Thriller.
Yeah, oh boy, that was a beast. We'll get to that when we get to 82 or 83. What year was it?
That was 82, I believe.
Okay. And then the big movies of 81. Do you know what the highest grossing movie of 81 was?
Is it a Spielberg movie?
It is a Spielberg movie.
Is it E.T.?
It is not.
Oh, that's too early.
E.T. was 82. No. Close Encounters was, I think, 79 or 80.
Is it? Oh, it's Raiders.
It is Raiders.
It is Raiders.
That was the number one grossing film of 81. Other big hits on Golden Pond.
I've seen On Golden Pond. It's fantastic.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't just like horror movies here. That's what we're going to talk about, but we don't just like horror movies.
Right.
Superman 2.
Some people might call that a horror movie.
Yep.
Superman 3, definitely. Or 4.
4 is really something else. We could include that on this show. Yeah. Arthur.
Arthur's so funny. What a joyous, what a delightful romp. Following an obvious alcoholic.
Yes.
As he bumbles around his day.
It's actually kind of alarming. And then they did that remake with Russell Brand.
Oh, you're right. I forgot about that.
I know. I think most people did.
Yeah, Arthur is the movie like you go, oh, that couldn't have been made now. But then they did make it. I didn't see it though. But you're just like, oh, well,
I saw it.
Did they treat it like, was he as big of an alcoholic as Arthur was?
Yeah, he was a drinker.
Okay.
Which is sad because Russell Brand, I think, was going through some serious
stuff. Yeah, that's kind of a bummer, too. But Dudley Moore's so sloppy.
I love Dudley Moore.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't think he gets enough appreciation.
Right.
I think he did a lot for comedy in general, and I don't think he gets... Anyway, Stripes, another comedy.
Stripes is as good as Ghostbusters until the last 30 minutes.
Two-thirds of a really good movie. Cannonball Run.
Bert.
Yep. Chariots of Fire.
Yep.
For Your Eyes Only.
Oh, yeah.
The Four Seasons.
I'm not familiar with The Four Seasons.
I've not seen The Four Seasons. And Time Bandits.
Time Bandits, Terry Gilliam, right?
Yep. What a weird year.
Very weird.
Bizarre. Yeah. We're in a weird transitional phase.
We are starting to get into the 80s, like the pure 80s.
Yes. Yeah. We're a couple of years out from straight up 80s. Yep. Just everywhere. Yeah. Anyway, you know, I think now that we know a little bit about the year, I think we should jump into some of these movies.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do it. All right, our first film of 81 is 1981's The Howling, directed by Joe Dante.
Love Joe Dante.
He's what a wonderful guy.
Joe Dante is awesome.
The IMDb synopsis says, after a bizarre and near-fatal encounter with a serial killer, a television newswoman is sent to a remote mountain resort whose residents may not be what they seem.
They're not.
They are not. So, Tim, I want to hear what you thought about The Howling this time around.
It's good. It's like, it's kind of like the 80s, in a sense, that it's like pre-Dante, Joe Dante. Like, we hadn't got, Joe Dante would go on to do Gremlins, The Burbs, Gremlins 2. I'm blanking on a couple other ones.
Small Soldiers,
which is good. Matinee, which I don't know if it's on TV, but it stars John Goodman, and it's kind of like a love letter to, like, 50 science fiction movies.
That's awesome.
It's so good. It's probably, like, his best movie.
Wow.
There's, like, one big one I'm forgetting here, and it's driving me nuts. But we'll move on. That gives you an idea of kind of the essence of Joe Dante, mm-hmm. if you will. And so this is kind of, like, Joe Dante, like...
Proto-Joe Dante.
Yeah. Like, he's not fully formed yet.
Sure.
And you can see it's kind of... It's working its way around the corners. Like, he's starting to become... Joe Dante Prime.
He's evolving into Joe Dante.
Yes, he has not hit Dante's peak yet.
Oh, no.
Goodbye, listeners.
That was so good. No, that should. No, that was great.
Yeah, we'll leave that in. So The Howling. I liked it. It gets a little slow in the middle. It's a little soggy in the middle. But if you're a Joe Dante fan, you can kind of see, where his ideas are coming from. It's a nice little snapshot of the time, too. So, as far as this goes, and we'll get into that, too, a little bit. But it had been a while since I've seen it. It's not my favorite werewolf movie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I think American Werewolf.
Were you sad when I picked the movies on this one. Were you a little sad when it wasn't American Werewolf?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Because I hadn't seen The Howling in forever.
Okay.
And I watch American Werewolf, like... pretty often.
Yeah.
So I had seen American Werewolf recently, so I wanted to revisit this one.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So not in Paris, but in London. if we pick that one, then I might.
Oh boy.
Leave the podcast. No, I'm not gonna. So I was excited. I'm glad we revisited it. Yeah. I think it's good. I don't think it's just below like classic level. It's good.
Yeah.
I think, if we're picking a werewolf movie from that year as to hold up as, like, the werewolf movie of 1981, because there are three of them, because there's also Wolfen,
yeah,
which is not really a werewolf
it's
movie.
It's a kind of. It's, like, on, like, a fringe werewolf movie, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So this is the middle one, but it's interesting in its own way, and I think it highlights a lot of that time period of 1981.
Yeah. The Howling is one of those movies, and this is not the last time that I'll say this on this show, but The Howling is one of those movies where the sort of urban legend that was created around my house about the movie The Howling predated my seeing The Howling by a couple years.
Okay.
My dad used to talk about The Howling as like all the time. He'd be like, "Oh, you haven't seen The Howling? We gotta make sure you see The Howling." Like he was like gearing me up for it, and he always used to quote the "I want to show you a piece of my mind." that line. My dad loves that line so much.
It is good.
It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had this build up for it, and when I finally saw it, I was like, "Well, that was so weird. That was not what I expected. It's so bizarre and kind of out there." And very sexual in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember enjoying it, and I remember it was kind of one of the first werewolf movies I had seen, I think. I hadn't seen the old Wolfman movie by that point, and revisiting it now, I'm kind of with you on this. I feel like it's got a lot of interesting stuff to say about the time period. I think there's some very cool effects work here. There's some very goofy effects work here, too. I believe that originally Rick Baker was doing the effects on this.
Okay.
And then he left and did American Werewolf in London.
Which has the better transformation scene.
It does. And left Rob Bottin
Which this is good too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's still great. But this is another. It's proto Rob Bottin.
Yeah.
Because he was a young guy. I mean, he did The Thing the following year, which is landmark stuff. I mean, it makes the Howling's effects look kind of tame by comparison. So you can see how much this guy grew.
Right. And I think my issues with the transformation scene in this one compared to American Werewolf is this one is like 15 minutes long. Like, it gets to the point where it's laughable how long this is going on.
It does linger for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You wonder, you're like, man, poor Robert Picardo. Is that him the whole time? Did he have to stand there while this animatronic? But anyway, no, I enjoyed it overall, and it should be included in the list of notable horror films for sure of that decade. I think it has enough to say to make probably a top 25, top 30 list in the 80s. I think it's fair.
Yeah.
Not the top 10 by any means.
No.
But it's up. It's on a list somewhere.
Yeah.
In a positive light.
Yeah, it's on the list of top 3 werewolf movies from 1981.
It is.
Yeah, it's number 2.
Absolutely. It's number 2. Yeah, probably that really makes it. What praise. I think what I find the most interesting about The Howling is kind of I feel like it runs a parallel line to what was going on with the AIDS virus at the time.
Yeah.
I think that's what I find fascinating. We're dealing with something that's hidden within. When you're dealing with both the AIDS virus and being a werewolf. And I don't mean to be insensitive here. I'm not trying to compare somebody, you know, who has AIDS to a werewolf. But I think there's a comparison to be made there.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting that this film chooses to present werewolves as kind of a group that's misunderstood. It's a group of people that are living together in kind of a niche society. It's kind of its own culture and its own in this mountain resort or whatever you want to call it. And I think that I think you could draw a line between that and the fact that really at this point in time and for the following I think few years the AIDS virus was considered a homosexual problem. It was considered a problem in the homosexual community.
In 1981, I don't know if you have, but New York Times released it was kind of like the first big mainstream story on AIDS. And it was called, they referred to it because they did not have the name AIDS yet. They referred to it as the gay cancer in the title of the.
It's horrifying.
So that just kind of shows you where we were at the time.
Yeah, the mentality is just so twisted. And you know, I think that stems out of fear. I think it stems out of fear of if we can make it about them being anybody who's in that community and not part of our larger, you know, then it won't get to us. It'll stay in that group. It's not, you know, it won't affect us. And I think that whether intentional or not, I think Dante is tackling that in this movie.
He's definitely tackling a mentality of a certain class at the time.
Yeah, because the leads are all...
They're upper middle class, basically.
Right.
Middle class, upper middle class.
Mm-hmm.
White folk.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think the most amazing part about The Howling to me this time around, and looking at it from that perspective, looking at it through the 1981 prism, is the fact that this movie ends with this blonde-haired, blue-eyed, beautiful white woman
mm-hmm.
who's, you know, upper middle class. She's on TV, so she's kind of a local celebrity.
Right.
She's kind of got it all. You know what I mean? Well, not by this point in the movie, but, you know, she could be viewed as the one who has it all. You know, like, oh, look at her. And she transforms on national, like, not national, but on television. She transforms before. And I think that's kind of it's weirdly prophetic almost about, like, told you so. Like,
right.
It's not just the problem of any small group of people or anybody you can just pin it on or blame it on. It's everybody's problem, you know? And I think that that's fascinating to me. And I think there's a lot about LA, and I want you to touch on that because I think that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's what I got from it. And I think a lot of stuff you got from it ties in, to kind of how I read it. I read it a little differently because I'm a big fan of Joe Dante, and a lot of the themes we talked about there are stuff that he hits on later on, especially in The Burbs. Like, The Burbs hits on a lot of what I think this movie...
I haven't seen The Burbs in years. I need to rewatch it.
Oh, yeah, you should.
Yeah.
I'll rewatch it with my buddy Joe. because he will quote every word.
Nice.
So
nice.
Maybe don't, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm on the fence.
So 1981, we're in 1981 at the time. It's kind of the precipice of what we remember the 80s of being. Reagan is the president now, but I mean, not really. Like, Reagan is the 80s president.
Oh, yeah, yeah. For sure.
When you take a look at the music of the time, this is the first year of MTV.
Mm-hmm.
This is when MTV debuted, which would actually, I think, influence the horror genre a little bit later on. I'm thinking of The Lost Boys and The Hunger.
Oh, 100%.
Yep. The mainstream music charts around this time, we touched on a little bit, but they were dominated by people. I mean, you listed off a lot of soft rock acts, but there was also like Kenny Rogers and Dan Fogelberg. And The Greatest American Hero theme song is on there, but like Prince was out on the fringes. A lot of new wave, there was still a lot of punk music happening at the time, but Prince still hadn't released 1999. He hadn't released Purple Rain. Michael Jackson had released Off the Wall, but we're a year away from Thriller.
This is fascinating to me, because what I just looking back, and I'd be very curious to ask somebody who was alive at the time. Looking back on 81 and everything you're saying and kind of what was going on, I feel like it's like a pot that's ready to boil over.
Right.
Like everybody's repressing everything. Mm-hmm. And I mean, by the end of the 80s, things may be poured over too much, but
yeah.
But anyway, I find that fascinating. I feel like the pot is boiling at this point.
No, totally. Yeah. Totally. And we're still dealing with a lot of after effects of the '70s too.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie Murphy was the other one I wanted to touch on, because he's on SNL at this point, but he hadn't broke big yet either. He was just starting to. So we're like, we're almost there. Like the seeds are planted and they're ready to kind of grow. And that's kind of what this movie feels like to me.
Mm-hmm.
Is like it's kind of an 80s movie, and it's got one foot in the past as well, because mm-hmm. there are a lot of references to older movies. The other thing around this time is we're broke.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we're super, America, I should say, because I know we have some listeners, but we're super broke, and unemployment is skyrocketing, particularly our biggest cities, New York and LA, and they're very violent. There's this website I found doing some research, junkie.com, and they put together a movie for a most violent year, which is the Oscar Isaac movie.
Yeah.
That I did not watch, but I believe we reviewed on the podcast.
Yeah, we did review that on the old show.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I did. I did.
What'd you think of it?
Not for me, but okay. I thought it was interesting. I wouldn't watch it again.
Right. That took place in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the most violent year in New York City history at that time. And I took some stats from there just to kind of give you an idea, because this movie takes place in LA, and New York, LA are kind of the two touchstones, the two coasts, in America. A record 2,166 murders were reported. This is the year the Gambino Mafia saga came to a head with the Shamrock Bar Massacre. Other mob members were like being super murdered around this time. It was constant murder of mob members. To add on top of that, I'm okay with joking about that because they're mob members.
Well,
you kind of know what you're getting into.
Sure. We've all seen Goodfellas.
Yeah. Yeah. There was 10 seasons of The Sopranos. He knew it was coming. This might be the worst of it. There's a trash strike during this time in New York.
Oh, God.
So, like, they say on the website, and I'm stealing the description, they're like, there's a trash strike in December that turned the city into a cesspit of garbage and bonfires.
Jeez.
So, it's a nightmare in the big cities in 1981. LA was also very violent, and I think there's some interesting subtext that you can read into with this movie. Some of it might even be text, because the movie opens with shots of cops driving through the inner city, and you're seeing all the seedier aspects. You're seeing the peep shows, you're seeing the strip clubs, you're seeing the drug dealers. And then it cuts to, Dee Wallace and that group.
Sweet D.
They're squares. They're squares at the time. And they're the people that are making Dan Fogelberg famous.
Yeah.
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 And it's when she starts to investigate kind of the inner city deeper things that she realizes that things are dangerous
mm-hmm.
some places. So what does she do? The movie itself, and they talk about it a little, a pretty good, it's a Shout Factory release before
yes.
Scream Factory. But there are a couple of interviews. There's an interview with Joe Dante and the writer whose name is escaping me, but he's a pretty famous writer, whatever. You can look it up on IMDb. But they talk about how it's a lot it deals with the theme of psychological repression at the time, and a lot of there's a lot of self-help. But it also, I think it, and it deals with a lot of repression of the uglier aspects that people like Dee Wallace's character are kind of afraid to confront. They both live a kind of a comfortable lifestyle in the movie, where they can ignore a lot of things that they don't want to think exist.
Written by John Sayles, real quick.
Thank you. That was driving me nuts. And it's when they're confronted by that, like, they kind of get shaken to their cores, and they decide, let's basically join this group of people that make us feel safe.
Yeah.
And it kind of reminded me of, like, we're getting into a lot of white flight at the time, a lot of white people leaving inner cities, and it kind of reminded me of a lot of people fleeing the bigger cities. We live in Detroit, where this happened, to the suburbs. And what I think is so funny about this movie, and the reason I tied it to this, is because Joe Dante is because of the burbs, but he's really kind of spoofing the suburbs in a way too in this movie, where he's like, okay, you can go to with all these people that make you feel safe and calm, but they're crazy too. Like, they all have their own problems. Like, I mean, he starts cheating on his wife. Or he starts cheating on his girlfriend.
Almost instantly.
Yeah. They turn into werewolves. So you can get away from some dangers, but you're probably going to run into more dangers because everybody's crazy.
Yeah. The danger might be more well hidden under the surface,
right.
But there are plenty of dangerous people in the suburbs too.
Yes.
I like that. That's
so that was a little bit of the reading I had. So, but I think it's a clever movie. I think it's fun. I don't think it's great. Great.
Sure. And I would agree. Definitely worth checking out, though. And the Scream Factory Blu-ray is really, really nice, as most of the releases are. So definitely check that out. Tim, I'd like to play a little game.
Oh, are we ready?
Yeah. Are you ready, I think, is the question. What I'm going to be doing here is I'm going to be... There are a lot of slasher movies in 81. Like, a lot of slasher movies in 81. This is kind of the
too many?
Perhaps. this is kind of the...
I'm looking at the list right now. There's too
the
many.
The birth of the slasher movie. Not the birth of it, but rather the maybe the afterbirth of the slasher movie. So we're going to play a little Guess the Slasher, okay?
Okay.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you kind of the backstory and the motive of each slasher. And I want you to guess. I'm going to have you pull up on Google. Just Google. And you guys can play along at home.
Mm-hmm.
Just Google horror movies 1981. And you'll see a scrolling list of movie posters and titles.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start naming them off, and you're going to guess.
This will be fun, because I've seen the big ones, and I've seen a couple of the outsiders.
Some of these are going to be easy.
Yeah.
So we're gonna give it the old college try here. You ready for it?
I'm ready.
All right. A man seeking to avenge the death of his mother.
That would be Friday the 13th, part 2.
I got the easy ones out of the way there. A man seeking revenge for the death of a high school track star.
Is that Final Exam?
It is not.
Okay.
Do you care to try again?
No.
That would be Graduation Day.
Graduation Day. Okay.
A disfigured man murders trespassing teens at a carnival.
Okay, that's Funhouse.
Yep.
Okay. I was going to say,
I was waiting. I wanted to see the puzzled look on your face.
Yeah.
All right. A killer out to avenge the death of a mentally challenged man.
Is that... No, that's not that one. Challenged man. Oh, don't worry. We'll throw some music in post-production, so you're not just listening to dead silence. mentally challenged man.
The death of a mentally challenged man.
Can I get it? Is there any hints I can get here?
Let's see. The title doesn't necessarily scream slasher movie. I'll say that.
Is it Hell Knight?
It is not Hell Knight.
Okay.
It does have Knight in the title, though.
Is it Dark Knight of the Scarecrow?
Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
That's funny, because I've seen Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, because that was like a CBS movie.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
A killer out to murder his sister.
Halloween 2.
Yep. A young man... traumatized by the death of his father, goes on a kill crazy rampage.
Boy. That's good. Is it? I hit the wrong button. Is it Happy Birthday to Me?
It is not.
Is it?
It's Another Holiday, though. figure that out.
Is it... There's some good stuff here.
There's really good stuff.
It's another holiday?
It is a holiday, yes.
Okay.
I'll give you another hint. One of our fair listeners brought it up in their feedback.
Oh, my God. How would I not know this? Did I listened to the feedback. I talked about it.
You were here.
Oh, this is driving me nuts. Oh, it's My Bloody Valentine.
It is My Bloody Valentine.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. I forgot about that plot point.
Yeah.
The main...
A prank. Let me see, actually. Let's go. Oh, man. I don't know which one to go with next. These are all so good. Have you noticed a trend, by the way? We're all avenging something.
Yeah.
That's always one of the great...
There's all murder. There's murders.
There's murders, yeah. A woman murders her half-sister's friend to get revenge for their mother's adulterous ways.
Repeat that one more time.
A woman murders her half-sister's friends to get revenge for their mother's adulterous ways.
Is that Hell Knight?
It is not.
Is that Happy Birthday to Me?
It is Happy Birthday to Me.
Happy Birthday to Me has an excellent cover, by the way. It's someone really getting a shish kebab shoved in the back of their throat.
Through their throat.
Yeah.
A town sheriff goes on a 35-year killing spree.
Is that The Prowler?
It is The Prowler.
Prowler is awesome.
It's really good. What are the underrated ones, I feel like?
The Prowler is directed by the gentleman who did Friday the 13th Part 4 that I can't remember his name right now.
Yes. Yeah, it's... Gosh, it's going to drive me nuts.
I got it. It is Joseph Zito.
Joe Zito, yeah. Yep. Yeah. A disfigured boy grows up inside an abandoned house and kills all intruders. Lots of disfigured boys. And
yeah, that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, right?
You got to kill people. Well, this is before plastic surgery, though.
It's true.
Repeat that one more time.
A disfigured boy grows up inside an abandoned house and kills all intruders.
There is a movie called Intruder, but that's later on. Oh, man.
You've said this one before. But you were wrong that time.
I was. Is this Hell Knight?
It is Hell Knight.
Hell Knight's my go-to.
Starring Linda Blair. Exorcist fame.
Yeah.
All right.
Producer is Erwin Yablans.
Yablans? Yeah, I think he produced some Romero stuff, too, actually.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Barbara Walters.
Yeah.
That's what that sounded like. A prank gone awry, leaving a man disfigured and out for revenge.
Is this My Man Cropsey, right?
Yes.
The Burning.
From The Burning, which just so happens to be the next movie on our list to talk about.
Yes.
Yes. Should we get into The Burning now?
You ready?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
I got to ask, are you ready?
Is anybody really ready for The Burning?
I don't know. We'll find out. We'll find out. All right. The IMDb synopsis says, I should first say that this is directed by Tony Malam, this is just a side note, but directed another film I love quite a bit called Split Second, which came out in 1992 starring Rutger Hauer. That is a movie that has not come out on Blu-ray to my knowledge, and it needs to because it's wonderful. Have you ever seen it?
I have not seen it. And you have told me about this movie in the past, and I want to see
Big
it.
Big fan.
What year did it come out?
1992.
We'll put that on the docket.
Yeah, for sure. All right. The synopsis for The Burning, which is the movie we're actually talking about. A former summer camp caretaker, horribly burned from a prank gone wrong, lurks around an upstate New York summer camp, bent on killing the teenagers responsible for his disfigurement. What I like about this is it ties in disfigured and revenge.
It is. I don't think that's correct, though, because he's not really going after the teens that did this to him
at all. Well, no. He's just kind of going after teens.
Yeah.
But there is one character who we get a third act reveal was involved in the prank.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So he's
a little confused.
He doesn't know what's going on anymore.
Yeah.
He's taking some damage. I'm going to start off real quick.
Go for it.
The Burning was a movie that I knew of. I believe I knew of it because I had a couple old Fangoria issues that I had bought at Comic-Cons. I just was fascinated by the pictures in them. Mm-hmm. And so I'd flip through them and I'd see stuff from movies that I'd never seen. And then if there was something that really intrigued me, I'd go to the video store and rent the VHS. The Burning, my video store did not have. And I don't think it was widely available either. So it wasn't like you could go to Suncoast and just buy a copy of The Burning. Like it was, you know.
Yeah.
Friday the 13th was easy, but The Burning, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd largely forgotten about The Burning for years. I kind of forgot about its existence until, of course, the internet. And I was on a big Savini kick. I kind of wanted to see everything Savini had been involved with from an effects standpoint. And The Burning popped up again. And I went, God, that's that movie that I never got a chance to see, that Friday the 13th kind of ripoff that I always wanted to check out. And I saw it, and I was really impressed. I went, I guess it was one of those things where I was shocked that I was never able to see it before.
Yeah,
like, it felt like it would be one that would be in heavy rotation for me as a kid. You know, like watching all those slasher movies.
And I think what's interesting is I don't think it, according to the DVD, I don't think it's a Friday the 13th ripoff at all, because I think they had the script before Friday the 13th was even made.
Yeah, and we should say this is the first film produced by the Weinsteins.
There was a script to this as well.
Yes, this movie had a script.
This is shocking.
Pretty good. But yeah, the Weinsteins do claim that they had this was a finished script before Friday the 13th happened. Whether or not that's true, or a little Weinstein spin.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
They've been known to goof around once or twice.
They are goofs.
They are goofs. A couple of goofballs. Remember that Snowpiercer fiasco?
Yeah.
Anyway, so who knows? But I do find that interesting. If there's some truth to that, then hey, good on them. But anyway, so The Burning was one that I didn't see until later on, and I always questioned how I did not see it. I think The Burning is mostly important to me in regards to 81 because it is right at the cusp of the slasher explosion, which would largely dominate the 80s in terms of horror, in terms of movies, really. I mean, once we got around to Jason becoming an icon, Freddy becoming an icon later in the 80s, like, they were on launch boxes, and there were, like, children's toys. And, like, it became pretty insane. There were Nintendo video games. The Burning never got any of that, which is fine.
Yeah.
It's probably deserved. But this was right on the cusp. And I think we just named off almost a dozen slasher films from this year.
You got a documentary, though. Cropsey did.
Yes. Yeah, and we'll get into that. Okay, I find that fascinating, too. obviously there's a lot of slasher movies from this year. We just named a ton of them. But why pick The Burning? And I think for me, the answer is I didn't want to pick a sequel. I think there are better slasher movies that have been named off tonight.
Right.
By us. But I think this is an interesting one because I think it's got a lot of actors that would become like bigger actors in it, which is kind of a staple of the slasher genre, is people showing up in slasher movies before they're famous and then kind of like ignoring that they were in them. Kevin Bacon being probably the biggest example. Actually.
He does not ignore it though anymore.
No, he's good with it now, but for a long time I think he was kind of avoided it. Yeah, I don't,
because he was laughing about it on Letterman.
Good. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was
awesome. But he also kind of was ashamed of Footloose, weirdly. For a long time.
Nah.
He didn't want to talk about Footloose. And now he's like on Kimmel or Fallon doing the Footloose dance. So, you know, go nuts, Bacon. I love it. The Bacon Renaissance, you know. It's really nice.
The Bacon Sans.
The Bacon Sans. But it's got a lot of first starts, including the Weinsteins, which is, I think, worth noting. It's got the effects work of Tom Savini, who perhaps is the master of practical special effects during this time period.
Yes.
And really pass the torch to the next masters, which would be K&B effects, most notably Greg Nicotero.
There's a picture of them hanging out on Instagram today,
yeah,
when I was scrolling
That's
through.
That's cool.
Yeah,
That's
it was
cool.
Awesome.
I like both those guys. And so it's cool to see him, you know, at work here and not doing his best work. I don't think he did his best work until 4 years later with Day of the Dead.
Oh, Day of the Dead. Yeah.
Yeah. But he was on a roll.
Yeah.
And he would continue that roll through the rest of the 80s. So I think there's some interesting stuff going on here. And I think that those reasons are enough to warrant The Burning's inclusion in the class of 1981 on our show. Tim, I don't want to get too much into what I thought about The Burning. It's schlocky. It's kind of fun. It's pretty misogynistic. It's a slasher movie. It's kind of a quintessential slasher.
That's kind of what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
When you have slasher movie in your head, if you have like a stereotypical slasher movie in your head, it's kind of The Burning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the sleaziest slasher I've ever seen. Not the sleaziest,
no.
Like, ever.
Oh, no, no, no.
But it's got enough sleaze to incorporate that element of the slasher genre.
Right.
It's not the goriest slasher movie I've ever seen, but it's got enough gore to incorporate that. So it's got a little bit of everything you could want from the slasher genre.
Lumped into one. Yeah.
Which is interesting because it's one of the early ones. So it's almost like people picked and chose from, you know.
Yeah, and when you think of slasher, like, the joke is like, oh, you want to see the slasher kill these kids. And it's kind of like that. I kind of wanted him to kill all these kids.
Yeah.
These kids, these are some bad kids.
Not a fan of the children here.
No, not at all. This movie is a lot skeevier than I remember. I'm with you, it's not the skeeviest
no.
of them, but it had been a while since I saw it.
On the skeevy scale, it's pretty high.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that. There's a lot of assholes in this movie. Cropsy is a bit of an asshole himself.
Our killer, yeah.
Obviously. It's a strange start to this movie. I want to dig a little deeper into this. Maybe one of our fine listeners has an answer for me, but it feels like the first kill of this movie is reshot. Because here's what happens. He gets a classic prank pulled on him where kids accidentally light him on fire.
Yeah, what was the prank? Like,
I didn't the prank was...
It was a flaming skull.
Uh-huh.
Where'd they get that?
Right.
First of all, full of, like, worms.
Right.
And they were like, hey, wake up, dude.
Let's attack...
And then he woke up and went, oh, shit.
Like, yeah, let's throw this flaming skull next to this can of gasoline.
It wasn't great.
Classic Jape kids. But then Cropsy gets out of the hospital, and the first thing he does is he attacks this, she seems to be a work-from-home prostitute, which is weird, right?
It's kind of bizarre.
I've never.
Either that or it was a really classy motel room.
I know, I thought she said, like, come inside to my home.
Yeah, that's...
Like, it seemed like she had a key and everything. And,
yeah, that's kind of strange.
Yeah. So, really, not a good business plan by her.
Nope.
But he kills her, and I didn't really understand that. I mean, I guess he's just trying to wet his whistle here. I mean, like, get in a groove, kind of like a warm-up in a basketball game.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, go kill.
He's limbering up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it just seemed weird. And then for the first, like, ever, he just keeps attacking women. And, like, I kept thinking, like, it was the guys that did it to you.
Right, like, why? What
there
they?
Wasn't a woman there.
It quit being mean.
Cropsy?
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, he's chasing a lot of well endowed women through the woods, and that became a thing with this right. genre. But yeah, but kind of like why Cropsy?
No, it just added a layer of gross.
Yeah.
To it.
Yeah.
The movie itself, I don't think it's very good. If you like lots of shots of camp, this is a movie for you. Everyone is kind of awful. The first half of it, like, it's just kind of a collection. It kind of feels like one of those Richard Linklater, like, hangout movies, like Dazed and Confused, or the new one he just came out with, Everybody Wants Some.
Kind of feels like Wet Hot American Summer.
A little bit, except I did not like hanging out with a lot of these characters. Jason Alexander, he seems to be selling condoms. He's a condom salesman?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a hustler.
So at least he's got some initiative.
Mm-hmm.
The one guy, the one bro, he's basically just a molester.
Yeah.
He
Glazer?
Is that his name? Is it Glazer?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I think I read this somewhere, he played the guy who Spider-Man, the villain in Spider-Man, robs at the wrestling arena.
Yeah, I think that's
him.
I
think he grew up to be that guy.
Just took my money.
So he got what was coming to him.
Yeah.
But he's, I mean, this isn't the news in 2006, but he's literally running around right now grabbing women by their vaginas.
Yeah.
In this movie. Yeah. So, like, I didn't like being around these people, and I was kind of happy when Cropsy showed up.
Yeah, you didn't mind watching him off people.
Yeah, dispatch with some of these fools. This movie is saved by Tom Savini and Rick Wakeman, who did the score.
The
Rick
score Wakeman. Is crazy good.
Yeah, the score is fantastic. Rick Wakeman from Yes, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The score is so good. There's a lot of talent in this movie that this movie does not deserve at the time, but it gets them while they're young.
Yeah,
But the movie doesn't kick in until that raft murder halfway through,
and that's really. I remember when I had read about this movie in the Fangoria, they had talked about the Raft Massacre, and so I was like, what is the Raft Massacre? I need to know.
The Raft Massacre delivers.
It does,
and that's Tom Savini, and he the effects are amazing. The kills are really good, and I read that in the interview on the DVD, he turned down Friday Part 2. To do this, because he's like, he even said, like, there's no way to make a Friday the 13th part 2. Jason's mom is, like, the mom is dead. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
And then they told him, he's like, that's the stupidest thing ever. I love Tom Savini. Apparently, he's not a fan of most people, but.
Yeah, no, he's fun.
I love his grumpiness.
He's kind of a cool, like, curmudgeon.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, glad I watched it again, because I did have fun. Excuse me.
Oh, you're good.
I did have fun with it. Apparently it made me sick. I did have fun with it, but you have to kind of meet the movie halfway on some of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I pretty much agree with everything you just said. I think that I want to run over this one with the cast real quick, because there really is a lot of talent involved here. We mentioned Rick Wakeman doing the score, which is awesome, from Yes. I'm a fan of Yes, I would say. Not like an avid listener, but, you know. I don't know the deep cuts, but fan.
Yeah. If they came on the radio, you wouldn't turn them off.
Nope, exactly. Brian Backer, are you familiar with Brian Backer?
No.
He was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
He's kind of the lead. Well, one of the two leads. I say him and Jennifer Jason Leigh are kind of the leads. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so he did some stuff after this. Jason Alexander, everybody of course knows from Seinfeld. Yeah. That's kind of his biggest, probably most recognizable role is George Costanza. Fisher Stevens.
Yeah, for the first half of the movie, I was like, is that Fisher Stevens? Like, I could, and then I'm like, oh my god, it is Fisher Stevens.
Yeah, he plays a character named Woodstock.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. He might be the only character where I'm like, I feel bad for him. He seems like an okay guy.
Yeah.
Like, he seemed like he was like 12 years old.
The two leads are okay too.
Yeah, they're all right.
Yeah.
Holly Hunter's in this movie.
She is in this movie, and I always forget it because she kind of just shows up.
She's just kind of in the background most mm-hmm. of the time. She's canoeing a lot in this movie. Well, everybody's canoeing a lot, but she's canoeing a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love Holly Hunter, and, you know, I mean, she doesn't do anything in this movie, but it's kind of fun to see
her. No, Holly Hunter is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of neat. And I think Brian Matthews, the kind of hunky male lead, I think he went on to do some stuff too. So
yeah,
there's a lot of
we already
future.
Touched on the Spider-Man guy.
Yeah, but of course, a lot of future stars or you know, successful character actors or whatever, to varying degrees. But most of the people worked, and then of course the Weinsteins. You know, I mean, when you think of film producer, I think that's like the first people you think of now, right? I mean,
yeah, if you're talking quintessential slashers. Quintessential film producers are the Weinsteins.
That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
That's true. If anybody knows how to slash something, it's the Weinsteins.
This did not win any awards. They would go on to win awards.
They do pretty good, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do good work. But yeah, no, I think this...
And Cropsey's a cool villain, too.
Cropsey's a fun villain, and it almost makes me wish that this had a couple more entries. Like, I would have liked to have seen, like, how do you bring Cropsey back from the dead kind of thing.
He has a flamethrower.
He does, yeah. And the thing, from what I understand about the production, there was a lot of issue with the final confrontation. Mm-hmm. It was going to take place in some sort of abandoned mine, like an old like underground mine, like a My Bloody Valentine type scenario. But they couldn't afford it, and so they found like some like banged up old church in the woods, like you know, with stone right. pillars and stuff. And they're just like, let's film it here. And so I think they kind of cobbled together the last bit,
uh-huh.
but I think somehow they managed to keep the flamethrower in the budget, which is pretty awesome. The thing that's funny about it is it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like he just, all of a sudden he has a flamethrower and he's trying to burn people. And I almost makes me wish that he'd had the flamethrower throughout and that was like his method of just, like, that would make sense. He got burned, so he's going to burn them, right?
Right.
I don't know. There's a lot here. I feel like the burning you could remake. Like, I feel like this is a movie that you could remake.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be different. Don't get me wrong. Like, it would be a very different movie, but you keep the basic idea of, like, a guy gets burned and he's out for revenge. And you call him Cropsey because you got to call him Cropsey.
Yeah.
Like, you could do this. I don't know. This one seems ripe to me for, like a lower budget, mid-tier slasher movie remake. And I'd watch it. For sure.
Yeah, I would watch it, too.
Like, a nice VOD release.
Can I talk a little bit about the urban legend aspect?
Yeah, please do, because that's something that I wanted to talk about, too.
Yeah,
because,
I went into this going, like, boy, like, how are we going to tie this into the time of 1981? Because it's not a deep film. But it is interesting because Cropsey's a folktale, and it was at the time, and I found a little bit of interesting stuff on it. And you can have you seen the documentary Cropsey? I mean, it's...
I have.
Different than this, obviously.
The documentary is... It's really scary.
It is.
Like, it's. Have you seen it?
I have.
It's very scary. It was on Netflix. I don't think it is anymore.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
But it might be on Amazon. It's worth a look. It's kind of the true story of perhaps a killer that was around in Jersey. I think it was New Jersey, right?
Yeah, it was New Jersey or Upper New York. But yeah. I believe the actual killer was, New Jersey.
Yeah. And there were a lot of... teens and young folk that went missing or bodies were found or various, mostly missing persons from what I recall. I need to rewatch it actually, because clearly I don't remember all.
Yeah. I was trying to pull some memories from my head too. I couldn't do it.
But I remember there were a lot of theories about who it was. There was a lot of blame about, oh, it was this guy. And they never really, from what I understand, completely solved it. solve what was going on. I think they pinned it on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were urban legends that were, you know.
Can I read you what I found?
Please do.
The original story of the Cropsey Maniac that was found in the New York Folklore Journal in 1977?
Please do.
Okay. George Cropsey was a judge. He had a wife and two children, all of whom he loved very much. He owned a small summer cottage along the shores of Maston Lake. His wife and children would go there for the summer months, and he would come up to visit them on the weekends. One night, two campers snuck away from the camp's scheduled evening activity and went down to the lake to roast some marshmallows. The fire they built went out of control, and there was a big fire on the lake. George Cropsey's family was burnt to death. When Cropsey read the report in the newspaper, it said he became completely white and disappeared from his home. 2 weeks later, one of the campers from Lakota was found near the lake, chopped to death with an axe. There was talk of closing the camp for the remainder of the summer, but they didn't.
See, there's your remake.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's not him that gets burned.
Right.
You know, that's his
wife and kids.
Yeah, that see, and then you have like a sympathetic slasher where you're kind of like, well, he's like the Punisher.
Right. Yeah. Oh my God, Tom Jane would make an excellent Cropsey.
A wonderful Cropsey.
So I mean, that's what, and to tie it into 1981, a lot of the 80s were hearkening back to simpler times.
Sure.
The 50s in particular is what I was thinking of. And folklore is a big part of harkening back to a simpler time because it's all about culture and tradition, and you can work in like ideas of feelings of shared culture and patriotism and all that jazz. And Cropsey is a folktale. And The Burning and a lot of slasher movies are kind of their folklore. And they have, I mean, folktales have, they're just simple stories that have a message at the end.
Yeah, I think almost every campfire story mm-hmm. that I've ever heard or told or been a part of it starts a lot like one of these slasher movies.
Right.
It's somebody who was wronged
right.
in the past who is out for revenge. It's right. always that. It's rarely like a Halloween scenario where it's just guy goes crazy.
Right.
It's almost always like a revenge tale, and it's part of the fun, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's all simple stuff. Too.
Yeah.
And the slasher movies are very simple, straightforward. And I mean, that story I read can basically be boiled down to like, hey, be careful with fire. Don't accidentally light some guy's family on fire. And Cropsey, but The Burning is basically, hey, don't play around with fire. You could light this poor guy on fire. And
yeah, cut it out.
He's going to kill you if you do. So, I mean, it's just kind of simple stuff like that. And the 80s were kind of like that. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of morality was kind of a little bit black and white at times, or it wanted to be. And it wanted to be like what people thought the 50s were. And that's my favorite thing about Mad Men, by the way, Mad Men shows you like, hey, the 50s, everybody was kind of garbage too. So.
Yeah. Nostalgia can be a very dangerous thing sometimes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm not going to go out and say this is a great film. I will say for sure that if you're a fan of slashers and you have not seen The Burning, you should see The Burning.
Yes.
For sure. And once again, there's a pretty cool Scream Factory release. It's worth buying for the cover alone.
Yeah, the cover is amazing.
It's one of the most insane things I've ever
seen.
It's
beautiful.
It's really beautiful. And what's funny is the original theatrical poster I love. Like, I've always been in love with that poster. And it's way classier than the movie. It looks like a romance novel, romance novel cover, which is awesome. But somehow they trumped it. They put this thing out and they trumped it. So Tim, the Burning, as we've said obviously before, has a lot of pre-famous people,
mm-hmm.
Which is a huge, huge. I think it's a fun thing to talk about. I think it's kind of a phenomenon. There's always. Like, the big stars seem to always start off in, like, schlocky horror movies.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah.
I love it so much. I love discovering one that maybe I didn't know about and then going and watching it just to see, like, the person be embarrassing. It's great. Because I'm a horrible person, much like everybody in The Burning. And I like to mock those that, you know, were in schlocky horror movies. So we're going to play a game again.
You're an American.
Yeah.
You like to build people up and then tear them apart.
Tear them down.
Yeah.
Yep. We're going to play a little game, before they were famous.
Okay.
And I'm just going to name a movie star or starlet.
Okay.
And you're going to guess, or, I'll try to give you hints if you can't figure it out. It's going to be kind of hard with some of these. So let's do it. Let's just go for it.
Yeah, give me one. Give me one.
Let's start off easy. Jennifer Aniston.
Leprechaun.
All right. Viggo Mortensen.
Viggo was in one of the Texas Chainsaw Massacres.
Yes. Which one?
He was in 3.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Leonardo DiCaprio. His first film role that I'm aware of.
It's one of the little guys, right?
It is.
Like a little monster?
It is a little monster type. Dante is probably a fan of this series of films.
Is it Critters?
Yes. Do you know which one?
Critters 2.
No.
Okay.
Critters 3.
Okay.
Which takes place in the city.
Yeah.
Critters
in the city?
Like a high rise.
Okay.
Yeah, and poor Leo's just got to get away from those critters.
Yeah, I think I jumped out of the Critters franchise pretty early.
You know what's funny about the Critters franchise?
Oh, tell me.
There's like a continuity. Like, there are a couple of characters that are in all of them.
Okay.
And like the story continues.
Did the Critters, did they cross over with anybody?
No.
Okay.
No, it wasn't a full moon.
I'm thinking of Puppet Master Demonic Toys.
Those two did and Dollman and the Demonic Toys did some.
Dollman.
They
yeah.
threw down a little bit. Tim Thomerson, I believe, played Dollman.
Tim Thomerson.
Yes. Star of Trancers. Jack Death of
Trancers. Trancers should have crossed over with Critters.
That would have been good. Trancers v. Critters.
Yeah.
I would have liked that a bit. Yeah. Tim Thomerson would have had a great time with that.
Because he was getting money.
Absolutely. Yeah. He was getting a paycheck. Jim Carrey.
Once Bitten.
Yep.
Have you ever seen it?
No.
Woof.
Bad.
I watched it because it used to be on. It was like a. It wasn't even HBO staple. Like, it wasn't even good rage. It was like a Cinemax staple.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and it's one of those like crappy like 80s like teen comedy type things. Oof.
Does he do a shitty like Dracula accent?
Not that. I don't remember.
Okay.
I remember being kind of toned down Jim Carrey.
Well, once again, it's proto Jim Carrey.
Yep.
Yeah. So all right. Tom Hanks.
Boy.
This one I'm not super
Bosom
familiar
Buddies.
With. Well, it's one of those generic like horror movie titles. I'm just going to tell you because I don't know how to.
You don't even have a hint. You can't even get a hint.
No.
Okay. No.
The title is similar to like When a Stranger Calls. It's that kind of like generic like. He knows you're alone.
Never seen it.
I'd like to. I have not seen it. George Clooney. There's actually
George
two.
Clooney was Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
I think it was Return, but it was in that series. Yeah. There was another one. He was in. I did not know about this one. It's another Return to something. Return to Horror High.
Oh, you are right.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, did you watch the? I want to go back to Tom Hanks for a second.
Sure, of course.
Did you watch SNL the David S. Pumpkins sketch? From
I did not.
Oh my god!
Pretty good
it.
Stuff. I'm gonna watch it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a Halloween themed.
Okay, good.
Sketch. So
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah,
I'm excited. I love me some Tom Hanks.
Oh, it's a fantastic episode, and he's awesome on the entire thing. Yeah.
I like that he just runs around photobombing people now. He's kind of doing like a Bill Murray thing.
And he was in a Carly Jepsen, you know, the Call Me Maybe? He was in a video of hers. Like, what? He just lip syncs to the song and he dances with it the whole time. It's amazing.
Oh, boy.
We should do a Tom Hanks podcast.
That's incredible. We should do. We should start a spinoff show. Ben Affleck.
Affleck was in Mallrats.
He was. That's true.
And he was in School Ties.
He was. This is not neither one of these are horror films.
Nope.
And I'm not
Kevin Smith would go on to do horror films.
Yeah, he would.
So would Brendan Fraser, who was also in School Ties. I'm just stalling.
Did Chris O'Donnell do horror films? I don't believe he ever did.
I don't think he did.
No. Well, he did Batman and Robin.
Yeah, and, well, Chris, he had a run there because he did like the Bachelor.
Oh, boy.
And well, NCIS can get kind of gross. He's on one of those.
The Bachelor's a really gross movie when you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, Chris O'Donnell is being chased by a bunch of women at one point down the street. That's kind of...
Like, they're literally, like, chasing him in wedding dresses, if I remember right.
I do not know Chris O'Donnell.
And we're not talking about Chris O'Donnell. Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck.
His School Ties co-star.
You got a hint?
It became a very popular television show.
Really?
Lasted for 7 seasons.
On what station?
It was on 2 stations. It started on one, and then it moved to the other. You're a big fan of this show. So am I.
Bah.
I'm sure you own the whole series.
Was he in Buffy?
He was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I had no idea.
Me neither.
I have not discovered him. I gotta rewatch it. So
do you like the Buffy movie?
I love the Buffy movie.
I like the Buffy movie too.
I saw the Buffy movie before I saw the show.
Because Whedon, yeah, me too. And Whedon's kind of disowned it, I think.
Yeah, I'm not, and it's too bad.
I mean, it wasn't his vision, obviously. I think his vision would go on to be Buffy, which I love.
Sure.
But I think it's kind of fun.
It's a fun movie.
I think it's kind
of
fun.
It really is.
Yeah.
Amy Adams.
I'm really bad at these.
You're doing pretty well so far, actually.
Was this a 90s film?
Yes, I believe so. I think it was early 90s.
Is she in one of like the Children of the Corn?
She's not, that I'm aware of. At least that's not the one that I went for.
Okay.
I'm Psycho Beach Party.
I have heard the title. I have not seen the film.
I will now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Amy Adams. She's fun.
Amy Adams is awesome.
Yeah. Jennifer Connelly.
Darkwater.
Yes, which is a classic. this is an Italian horror film.
Okay.
From perhaps the great Italian horror director.
Is it one of the later Argento movies that?
I think it's in the middle of the filmography.
I don't know.
Phenomena.
Okay.
Stephen Root.
Stephen Root of Office Space fame?
Yes. Milton, right?
Milton from Office Space. He's also been in a lot of Coen Brothers movies. Yeah. This would be a much better game for me if I was just naming other movies. These
right.
People
You'd
been
be doing
in.
Really well. Yeah. Yeah. It is a film from director George Romero.
Is he in the Dark Half?
He is not. I like the guess, though.
Is he in Bruiser?
Not Bruiser. Earlier. Than both of those,
both
I believe.
Both of those. Yeah. It's not Martin.
No, later than Martin.
Is it another King?
It is not a King adaptation.
Is he in Day of the Dead?
No.
Is he in...
It's one of his, I think it's one of Romero's more underrated movies. I have to revisit it, but I remember actually kind of thinking it was effective.
I'm blanking on this. This is like mid-80s then, right? Or late,
yeah, somewhere in there. It's got a little animal in it.
I don't know.
Monkey Shines.
Isn't that a Stephen King?
No.
Okay.
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Please tell us if I'm wrong, fair listeners.
You're not wrong.
Julie Louise Dreyfus. This film spawned a sequel.
Okay.
Which became totally unrelated to the first, but became quite the cult sensation.
The sequel did.
Yes, the sequel did.
This is going to bother me.
I can tell you another person who starred in this film.
Okay.
Sonny Bono.
Toxic Avenger 2?
And the lead character's name was Harry Potter in this film.
What movie is this?
Troll.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she turns into like a fairy or something. Mm-hmm. It's really bizarre. Patrick Dempsey.
No clue.
The Stuff.
Dempsey's in The Stuff?
Apparently.
I just watched The Stuff.
I don't remember seeing Dempsey.
Me neither.
But he's in it.
Okay.
Okay. The internet never lies.
No.
And
I am falling apart.
You were doing really great in the beginning. Charlize Theron.
She's in one of the Children of the Corn.
Yeah. Movies. Do you want to guess which one?
Rave to the Grave.
I'm sorry, I just lost my mind. He said Rave to the Grave. Children of the Corn 3, Urban Harvest. Which, apparently, that was a trend, is you take an existing horror franchise and you move it to the city, the big city, for the third installment. Because Critters 3, Urban Harvest, I like it.
Leprechaun waited till the fourth.
Yeah, they held off a little bit. They had to do some space travel first.
Well, I did terrible. But... I thought I brought it back hard with Children of the Corn at the end.
Yeah, I'm proud of you.
Rave to the
Corn. I am proud of you.
Yeah. have you seen Urban Harvest?
No. You know what's, I do not. I'm not a big Children of the Corn fan.
No, me neither.
Like, I really don't have any interest in it. I rewatched the original thinking that it was like some sort of horror classic, and I'll be honest, I didn't like it very much.
Boring. If I,
yeah, nothing really happens. Nice to see Linda Hamilton, but
right.
That's about it. All right, our third and final entry into the class of 1981 tonight is The Beyond from director Lucio Fulci. One of the great Italian horror directors. The IMDb synopsis says, a young woman inherits an old hotel in Louisiana, where after a series of supernatural accidents, air quotes, she learns that the building was built over one of the entrances to hell.
Yeah.
Yes. Tim.
Yeah.
Tell me about The Beyond.
The plot?
I want you to tell me.
Like, I can't tell you about the plot.
Tell me the plot. What's the plot? What happens in The Beyond?
What you just said.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then there's some other stuff that just kind of happens sporadically throughout the film.
Just cool stuff that's just happening.
Yeah, this movie's something else. I like it.
Uh-huh.
What's funny is it may be one of the more coherent Fulci films I've ever seen. And I still can't tell you what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Because at least like, there is a sequence of events that seem to be connected.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he cares. About coherence when it comes to... I don't think he cares about plot coherence. In fact, I have an interview that I picked up from Starburst Magazine.
Starburst Magazine?
Starburst Magazine, yeah. Whoa. I believe it's like a... like I think it's like a British like science fiction horror magazine from the 80s. This is like the August of 1982. And so this from that issue is a snippet. They asked him, did you conceive... because this is part of his trilogy, the Gates of Hell trilogy.
Yeah, which also includes, I think he did it in a 3-year period,
mm-hmm.
and it's City of the Living Dead is one of them, correct?
Yes.
And then the other one is House by the Cemetery.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So they go, did you conceive of The Beyond as a sequel to City of the Living Dead? And then he goes, no. My idea was to make an absolute film with all the horrors of our world. It's a plotless film. A house, people, and dead men coming from the beyond. There's no logic to it, just a succession of images. The Sea of Darkness, for instance, is an absolute world, an immobile world where every horizon is similar. I want Fulci to like talk to me in the bed at night.
What a wonderful, an absolute world.
He goes, I think each man chooses his own inner hell, corresponding to his hidden vices. So I'm not afraid of hell, since hell is already in us. Curiously enough, I can't imagine a paradise exists, though I am a Catholic. But perhaps God has left me? What is this answer? Yet I have often envisaged hell, since we live in a society where only hell can be perceived. Finally, I realize that paradise is indescribable. Imagination is stronger when it is pressed by the terrors of hell. This man was asked, let's go back to the original question here. Did you conceive The Beyond as a sequel to City of the Living Dead? Pretty straightforward. You could answer that yes or no.
You could literally answer it with one word.
And he comes up with that.
I think that's a pretty good insight into the mind of Lucio Fulci. and maybe why... And I don't want to... You know what? I want to put this out there right now. This is not us attacking this film by any means.
No. No, in fact, he even says the things we're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
This movie is a series of grisly, disturbing, and often beautiful images.
Yep. And that's where it works.
100%.
Yep.
When it tries to have something of a plot is when it kind of falls apart for me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
that's fascinating stuff from him. Wow. I want to watch some interviews.
Yeah. There's a whole interview online. If you just type in Starburst Magazine, Lucio Fulci, August 1982. The whole interview I looked through, I pulled that quote because it's so good.
It's great.
So yeah, I'm with you. When it commits to the plotlessness and is just a series of grotesque gore and creepy things happening, that's when it works. The sequence with the tarantulas is my favorite. That is an all-timer.
It's brutal, man.
It's so gross.
And I've seen this before. I mean, I've seen this movie before, but I think I forgot how brutal that scene was.
Yeah.
And Fulci, he's obsessed with eyeball gore, man. He loves doing horrible things to people's eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
I think just three in this movie alone. There are three eyeball-related deaths.
Yeah, there's
the guy. Well, the first guy gets Joe the Plumber, which is amazing to me because Joe the Plumber, if anybody remembers, was a kind of a seminal figure in
2008.
Yes, yes. So good stuff. but Joe the Plumber gets his eye kind of just scooped out, with a finger.
Yeah, he does.
Kind of
yeah.
plucked out. And then the second one is the lady who gets her head shoved onto like a spike and her eyeball pops out.
Uh-huh.
And then the third one is just a tarantula like eating somebody's eyeball.
There are some other good kills. Yeah.
Yes.
You've mentioned a couple and you prompted me. He has two acid to the face kills in this, if I recall.
And the effects are pretty cool.
The one is really cool where she's in where they're in the morgue, mm-hmm. is it? And then the person is just lying there. Like, no. It's very strange. Like, there's no emotion on their face. I mean, obviously, there's reasons for that. And then the acid is just dripping, and, like, pouring out of their face, and it's just melting off.
Yeah, I like that scene a lot.
I really liked it, too.
Because she just, like, I don't even know why she falls. Like, what exactly?
No. She falls and then goes deathly still.
Yeah.
And lets acid pour out of her face and does not move throughout the entire time.
Nah, she doesn't really even
I guess
try.
Maybe she's unconscious.
Maybe she was knocked out.
Maybe she's already dead.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Died of fright.
Yeah.
From some unseen force.
Then there's a one where the little girl gets her head blown off.
That is one of the greatest headshots, I think, ever.
Yeah.
Period.
Yep.
That's way up there, and it's still looks amazing.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Oh, the gore is really good in that.
It's really good. Really, really. And the thing is, I want to get it real quick. I want to get into the ending of the movie too. And I because this is, I love the gore. I love all the the effects work. I love the basic idea of, the concept of the hotel being built on a gate of hell. I think that's interesting. I think if somebody was making that movie and was more interested in the plot as opposed to the visuals, I think you'd have an interesting story there. Mm-hmm. I think it starts off kind of like a haunted house story, and then it becomes a zombie movie. And from what I understand, that was at the insistence of the German producers, the financiers. They okay. said, Lucia, you're making a zombie movie. You need to stop with this haunted house garbage. Tarantulas, they're out. Those are so 1980. It's time to get on, like,
board.
Let's do some zombies. And so it becomes a zombie movie. But it really doesn't bother
and
me.
You listen to the Germans when they tell you to
yeah.
do something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, history has proven this. But the ending is, I think, and once again, this is not a knock on Fulci. It's not a knock on the film. And I totally understand after rewatching why so many people hold this film up. Because, God, does it have some great stuff in it. But I think the ending is the reason why most people fondly remember this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I truly think that. Because going back into rewatching, after I think 5 or 6 years of having not seen it, the one thing that I remembered was the ending. And I think I remembered a little bit about the I remember there were tarantulas in it. But that ending, the final shot of them kind of stepping through the void, and they're in the beyond, we'll call it, or in hell or whatever it is such a gripping visual. And it's just, it's one of the more horrifying horror movie, just that shot of them from behind and nothing but gray in the distance, completely colorless, void of any sort of contrast. It's just gray and covered. It's weirdly, it weirdly evokes a lot of 9/11 imagery, which obviously was, you know, much later, but it reminds me of that when I watch it now. I see it and I go, oh my God, it's like all the ash and the, mm-hmm. you know. And so it gives you that nasty feeling and that kind of feeling of, I don't even want to say, it's not scary, but it's...
dread.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just complete dread. And then, of course, their eyes going white. And which
it's like, yeah, like an emptiness, like a coldness. Yeah,
yeah, like there's nothing left. Mm-hmm. Like it's it. And I think it evokes a lot of the fears of the time of nuclear war. Because if you look at, I don't suggest doing it, but if you look at, you know, kind of pictures of fallout and what it looks a lot like that.
yeah.
If you look at images once again of 9/11, it looks a lot like that. And I think it's, if the intention is that is hell, that they have entered hell at this point, which I think is what he's going for there, then it's quite an interesting and unique vision of what hell would be. You're used to seeing the classic kind of fire and brimstone and that kind of look. But this one is totally void of any of that. It's just, it really is depressing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what makes it interesting. And I think actually the interview that you brought up and the quote from Fulci about each man kind of inventing his own hell or creating his own hell from his vices, that this is Fulci's vision of hell,
right.
Or one of his visions of hell, because he had a few. But I find the ending to be the most interesting and probably thought-provoking part of the movie, for sure. Other than that, kick-ass gore. So.
Yep. No, I'm in the same boat as you.
Yeah.
Yep. We've talked a little bit about location. Or I have talked a little bit about location in the other two movies. We talked a little bit about New York, New Jersey folklore. Talked a little bit about New York, L.A. around the time.
Great shots of camp, of summer camp.
Camps, canoes.
Yeah, so much canoes.
Rivers.
So much canoes.
So many canoes.
So many canoes.
It's canoe porn.
It is canoe porn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This takes place in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans is one of the... New Orleans is the most magical place on earth. I've only been to New Orleans once.
Yeah.
I vaguely remember.
Not that long ago.
Vaguely remember. For my 30th birthday.
Yeah.
It was kind of like my last hurrah
mm-hmm.
when it came to that kind of partying.
You don't know that.
No, I'll probably go back to New Orleans at some point.
Yeah.
New Orleans is, so it takes place in New Orleans. This movie, it doesn't tie into New Orleans a lot. I just think it's interesting. I think New Orleans is a place, it's fascinating, particularly when it comes to death. New Orleans is a city that was almost wiped out by a hurricane 4 years after it was founded. They have haunted tours there. There are like hundreds of haunted tours there. It's like their biggest tourism is like they just get the rubes on haunted tours of cemeteries. Their cemeteries are built above ground. Because of the flooding.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's just, they call them cities of death, and it's just, it's tombs and mausoleums that look like cities built. So, of course, it doesn't flood and then bring up all the awful things underneath. It's a city that's had a lot to deal with when it comes to that.
There's a lot of, kind of voodoo culture,
voodoo as well,
Haitian culture,
yeah.
and stuff like that, kind of blood its way into New Orleans and
mixed in there.
It's a big part of the culture of, I mean, or it has been part of the history of that city.
And when I was walking around, this is what I was trying to remember. When I was walking around, there was a sign for an apartment for rent, and underneath the apartment for rent sign, it said "not haunted." So that gives you an idea. It's kind of a city that's built up in a reverence toward death in a way where they just kind of, I mean, it's part of life there. And they make jokes about it and they confront it and they laugh at it. And there's the idea down there that, I mean, confronting death is what is how you live. It's what learns to be alive. And that's New Orleans and that's kind of horror movies for me. And that's kind of the beyond. So it's just an interesting tie-in. The movie itself really has nothing to do with New Orleans, I don't think.
No, I think it's a cool choice because of the mysticism surrounding that city.
Yes.
So that works.
And Nick Cage has a mansion there.
Sure.
Or he did at one point, but I think he lost it when he went crazy broke.
It's because he purchased a copy of the Book of Eben. And he,
can you imagine? I bet you Nick Cage has lived the beyond at some point in his life.
Oh, he's been to that gray wasteland and back. It was when he made Season of the Witch.
Season of the Witch, yeah. Yes. I can't remember if Ghost Rider Part 2 was filmed in New Orleans, but I remember there are stories of the directors and Nick Cage getting drunk in cemeteries and just getting hammered on liquor, and that's when he invented his Cobra dance that he uses quite a bit in that movie.
That's the only explanation. All right, yeah, so The Beyond, I think it's another one. I think, I hate to repeat myself here, I think it's worth checking out.
It's good.
I don't think it's for everybody. I think if you don't mind a largely plotless film and you want some unique visuals and some interesting, really some beautiful imagery and some horrifying imagery, I think it's worth checking out, for sure.
I agree.
All right, well, I think that does it for our trip back to good old 1981. So everybody remove your soft cell cassettes from their player, from your boom boxes, and make sure you send us feedback. I think that's really the most important thing we want to stress at the end of this episode here is getting that feedback from our first episode, Class 99, was awesome. And
yeah.
I'd love to hear what people feel about all three of these movies, especially The Beyond, actually. That's the one I'm really curious to to hear what people think of. You can leave us feedback on Facebook. That's a good way to get a hold of us. Facebook.com/horrormovieyearbook. We are on Twitter. So shoot us a message or tweet at us. It's @HMyearbook. Yeah. Because we can't fit Horror Movie Yearbook into Twitter.
Yeah. Yep.
We have a website, horrormovieyearbook.com. So go check it out. We post our episodes there, but we also post our episodes on iTunes, which is probably the easiest way to download us. So, and please, by all means, leave us a review. Leave us a rating. You know, I know that iTunes can be kind of a pain in the butt for that, from what I understand, for leaving reviews and ratings. It can.
I never do it.
Be a little funky. I don't, and I always feel
guilty.
I think I did it
for the Midwest Film Nerds.
So be good to us, like we weren't to the other podcasts that we listen.
I like if you created another podcast and you do another podcast, I like your podcast.
Yeah.
I want to put that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. So yeah, check us out on iTunes or on our website. I do want to say we didn't mention this last episode, but big thanks to John Morrell.
Yes.
Friend of ours and fellow Midwest Podcast Network host.
Host of the Midwest Game Nerds.
Host of the Midwest podcast, Game Nerds, which is, if you're a video gamer, check it out.
Yeah, they did PlayStation VR this week, I think.
Which I played, and I played the Resident Evil 7 demo.
Did you?
It's horrifying, yeah. Tim. It's really freaky. And I don't get scared by video games.
Uh-huh.
It freaked me out. Like, legitimately, I was kind of unnerved by the end of it.
Yeah, you told me someone, like, stabbed you in the throat or something.
Yeah, I kind of experienced, what it's like to have a knife thrust at your face, which is not fun.
That's good. I mean, it's good you did it in a safe space.
Yes. Yeah, better than in real life. So thank you, John, for our opening song.
They also like
song.
Destiny, if you like Destiny.
Yeah, they talk about Destiny sometimes.
Please be sure to check it out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, thank you for our intro music, John. We really appreciate that. Once again, if you didn't catch it earlier, our next episode, and we're doing this show twice a month, so every other week you'll see an episode come out.
Mm-hmm.
Gives us time to do my half-assed research. Tim does legit research. I do kind of half-assed research. But it gives me time to do that half-assed research. And it gives us time to watch all the movies and kind of let them digest. So
yeah, I try to whole-ass it. At least 75% ass it.
No, you honestly give your all, and I appreciate that. We need you.
Yeah.
We need you. But yeah, so that'll be, the next episode will be 2009, the class of 2009. And we'll be talking The Collector, Orphan, and Drag Me to Hell. So very excited about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, until next time, we will catch you later. Tim, anything you want to say to our listeners before we go?
No, just keep your feet on the ground. Keep reaching for the stars, you know, like Casey Kasem used to say. Yeah. Keep watching horror movies. They're good for you.
Yeah.
If you have any ideas, send them in, like, if you have any ideas for segments that you want to hear.
Yeah.
Go nuts. We love feedback, and we love our listeners.
Absolutely.
I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Aw, Tim. Such a softie. Yeah. Such a teddy bear.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, guys. See you next time.
Bye.